want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 151 of the Geocaching Podcast, Cheap DIY Containers. I'm your host, XFunkX, with
Monty Ryder.
If you want to participate on our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. We have a voicemail line, which is 206-350-3GPS. And we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GC Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Cache Advance. See cache-advance.com for all of your great caching needs. Welcome back, Montu. We don't actually have Daryl on the line tonight with us because he lost his voice earlier today. So I told him to take it easy, have a break, and we'll see him next week. But Montu, congratulations on getting your power back.
Oh, thanks. It's definitely good to have it back. Even had a blast over this last weekend. We attended the FGA Revival, which was GC23ABE. And while there, also attended a Coins and Pins event that was that night and found a total of 26 caches. Thought we'd hit the 500 mark, only to find out when I got home and got everything squared away that we were only at 491. Talk about a bummer.
Well, congratulations. You actually really are ahead of me now. I know it's not really a race, but it does seem like that it has been with us kind of a race, and you are ahead of me now for a good while, probably.
Well, the summer months are coming, and my caching is probably going to be slowing down.
Now, yeah, that is true. Now, speaking of summer months, the 10-year events are coming up here soon. So if you guys are going to be getting to one of those 10-year events, don't forget that you'll need to have a group photo or video of the event in order for it to be a 10-year event and get that cool icon. Now, I'm hoping that we'll get a number of our listeners calling in with reports from the 10-year events around the countries, different countries. So if you have a 10-year event that you're going to, call our voicemail line 206-350-3GPS, and we'll try to get those scheduled in for our May Cacher show. Now, of course, all you have to do to call our voicemail line, again, is 206-350-3GPS with a short message, or if you've got a digital recorder like some people do, you can email that MP3 file to 206-350-3GPS@geocachingpodcast.com, and we can use that also. Now, Montu, do you have any of those 10-year plans events that you're going to be going to?
Actually, yes, we do. We are planning on attending the 10 years River Park, Florida event, GC1YFPM. It's going to be held by Azonzo Karst, and that will be on Sunday.
Yeah, we're going to be going to one too. The one we're going to be doing is the South Bend event. It should be a lot of fun. And so I look forward to hearing everybody's reports on that. Now, it's actually been, Montu, you said that you guys had some caching plan, or this caching this last week. We actually got some caching in yesterday. It's funny because I'd been planning it for a while to do some caching with the boys, but other things just kept popping up and getting in the way. But it was kind of funny because I wasn't even probably a mile down the road and my boys fell asleep. They were both asleep. So we hit three caches. Well, I found two and DNF'd one. Both the boys were asleep for those that I actually did found, though, so fine. But we ended up playing in the park, and they loved it anyways. So with that, Daryl isn't here with us live because he doesn't have a voice, but he did pre-record the photography for cachers, so let's hear that.
Learn to take and use photos for geocachers. It's time for Photography for Cachers.
Having looked last week at the most important piece of photographic gear you can purchase, let's move on to the next most important item. Camera supports vary from the well-known tripod through more innovative designs for solo shooting. Having some form of camera support is important to geocaches for a couple of major reasons. The most obvious is that many times you'll need to be in the photos with a group of fellow cachers or some specific items in the background. While you can sometimes hold the camera at arm's length, That's not always going to work, particularly with larger groups or when you need something in particular in the background. Another is that camera supports help steady the camera, allowing for longer exposure times in low light. You'll also find that video is much easier to watch when captured from a stable platform rather than your shaky hand. I have a variety of supports at my disposal, and will readily admit that more times than not, the tripod stays in the car. I usually keep something handy, and there's a wide range of options from which I can pick. We'll start by looking at the most obvious support. A tripod is always a good, safe photographic investment if you're willing to spend the money for good quality. They'll outlast your digital camera and very likely your car. I have an older Bogan tripod, which was the second I purchased new nearly a quarter century ago, and it's still going strong. That first was an affordable model, and that only lasted a couple of years. I've since added many more tripods for specific goals like being small and light on the trail or strong and better at handling the big lenses. The first rule to getting a good tripod is pretty simple though. You're not likely to find one at a big box store. The ones from the big box stores can be good starter or throwaway options for lighter cameras, and many travelers like them since they're cheap and easy to replace when destroyed or lost by the airline. There are also some small tripods built to stand on desks or be attached to branches. While these might not be tall enough to set up in the middle of the trail, you can frequently find a sign, railing, boulder, or tree to use. No matter which route you choose, carefully check the weight the tripod supports, not the weight of the tripod itself, and make sure that it will properly handle your camera with a little bit of extra to spare for things like batteries or your hands. Choose well and you'll probably not need to replace a tripod as long as you cash. The more simple form of a camera support is a beanbag. These have regained popularity with the expanded use of digital cameras and camera phones. A beanbag requires something on which to set it and the camera, but doesn't require that the camera have a tripod socket, making them ideal for camera phones. Typically, these are handmade by the user, but a variety of pre-made options have begun popping up. One of the more interesting derivatives is a monster pod, which does require a tripod socket. It can stick to many smooth surfaces thanks to a gel in its underside. I grabbed one of these monster pods, but I've yet to try it. Try making a beanbag yourself, perhaps in your favorite colors. They're small and can usually fit into a pocket when on the trail. The most interesting class of camera supports really hadn't been seen before the digital camera revolution. These are sticks with a tripod post at the end to secure the camera. These are designed to be held out in front of you for better self-portraits than simply holding the camera at arm's length. Some like the X-Shot are self-contained, but I was recently contacted to try one designed for hikers. The stick pick is a simple ring that you slide onto your trekking pole, then attach your compact camera to it. They sent me one to try out, and I really haven't used it much, but I love the concept. These are great for getting a little needed distance between you and the camera. Don't count on them helping out in low light situations, as holding the camera out like that will be less stable than hand-holding. This is by no means a complete list of options. There are all sorts of goodies left out from here, but I've tried to touch on some of the better, more common options for geocachers. Here are my recommendations for geocachers based on their type of camera. For camera phone users, try a beanbag. There are tripods, like the Gorilla Mobile, specifically made for some camera phones, and that's a great option as well. For compact camera users, try the GorillaPod. These are small, flexible tripods great for use on the trail and generally don't cost too much. If you're already using a trekking pole, add the stick pick for those quick self-portraits. For super zoom users, a cheap tripod from one of the big box stores might be your best pick to start. That will allow you a range of heights and will freestand on the trail. Of course, GorillaPod has options that work too and are worth consideration. For DSLR users, for all your photography, I can't recommend highly enough buying a quality tripod. A great alternative though is a beanbag, which can get close to the ground and will be easier to carry. Future articles in this series will talk more about how to take advantage of these supports, but come back next week as we look at self-timers and remote releases.
Groundspeak posted a little information Monday about their surveys they're collecting. The request has gone out to geocaching.com members based on their email settings. If you received an email with a link to SurveyMonkey, you'll be able to click through to fill that out. Those links are only good for one survey though, so forwarding the information to another geocacher won't work. We'll post a link to that posting in our show notes.
Sadly, we have another geocaching bomb scare in the news this week. an LPC in Anaheim, California, led to the evacuation of three businesses as the bomb squad was called in. Two people watched a couple of men pull up in a blue sedan and place a container inside a light pole about noon. The witnesses flagged down a couple of Anaheim police volunteers, who then called the bomb squad, along with fire and hazmat teams. Around 5 p.m., the container was opened and the logbook was found. We'll link to that article on the situation in Orange County Register.
Geocaching question of the day. The bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the bad cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Twitter user Maine Gray wants to know, have you ever shared a first-to-find with someone, a co-FTF? 81% of those that replied said yes, they had shared an FTF with people looking for the cache at the same time they were. So what about you? Have you ever shared an FTF with someone? Want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, gqotd.cachingnw.com, and follow me, the bad cop, on Twitter.
Well, as I stated today, we are going to be talking about cheap DIY containers. And when we thought about cheap DIY containers, the only person that we could think of that would be amazing to talk about this was Head Hard Hat. We've seen some amazing containers that he has put out in his geo snippets. So, Head Hard Hat, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks a lot, Xbox Games, because I really do appreciate it. It's always great to know that when you think of cheap, you think of me.
Well, you know, I just meant you have some amazing containers. And so, when we thought of that topic, you know, it was you're the only person that could effectively talk about this.
I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Over the years, I've come across so many different types of geocaches and have been able to test them and find out for each and every different type of environment out there what works and what doesn't.
Well, so obviously there's the cheap containers that are going to be not good for geocaching, you know, things like that. But let's talk about the ones that are great geocaching containers. Where would you start? I mean, if I want to place a cache, there's obviously some things that I can do to create a cheap container that works great in my environment. So what are some of the things that we can use?
I would think, first off, what I like to do with any container, and I highly recommend this, is let's say, for example, you want to try a 35-millimeter container. Now, there are good ones, and there are bad ones. The bad ones are the ones that are black containers that happen to have that gray top that just kind of folds over. The good ones are the white ones that have almost an O-ring setting that for the cap. What I highly recommend for testing any of the containers is to do a dunk test. In other words, take the container, put a piece of toilet paper in it, and actually physically dunk it underwater to see if it's waterproof or not. But for 35-millimeter containers, the white ones are definitely the better one to go.
All right, so the 35-millimeter containers, which are, by the way, getting really hard to find these days. So what else can we use that's a container that maybe something that I have around the house, something that is going to stick out? I mean, because I know that I've used something like coffee cans, but usually the coffee cans for me, especially if they're metal, they rust. And even the plastic ones tend to crack and don't weather here in Indiana too well. You know, Montu, they may work for you in Florida. But so, Head Hard Hat, what else can we use?
Well, the ones that, now that you mention it, that the coffee cans are definitely not a good container for a couple reasons. One, they rust, and two, the seal doesn't stay that well after multiple uses. Pill bottles tend to have about the same consistency as the black 35-millimeter containers. Some of them work okay, but not as many as you would think, and what they're really good for is to put your logbook in instead of a baggie, put it in a pill container, and then throw it into a regular size or an ammo box. It tends to keep them a little more drier. The ones you want to stay away from are like the Altoid cans. Those are really popular, and you want to stay away from them just the same reason that you want to stay away from the coffee cans. After about a year, they turn into a weapon. One of the ones that I really do like, you may not necessarily find it around the house, but you can get them, and they're relatively cheap at any drugstore or any different Army surplus store, are the pill containers. They're about $4 nowadays. They're a little bigger, wider than a Bison tube, but they do have an O-ring on them, and they are very good for camouflaging and as a micro.
So basically you're talking about like a fireproof, like a waterproof fire match container, correct? Same type of an idea?
Yeah, there's two different ones. There's actual pill containers that you can get at like your pharmacy. They just look like fat Bison tubes. And also, if you go to the Army store or if you go to some of your sports centers in the department stores, you do get the Army match containers. Those are really nice. Those will run you about $3.50, give or take.
All right, so you did mention ammo containers. I know that those aren't necessarily something that we have laying around the house, most people anyways, unless you're obviously a longtime cacher or someone who, you know, likes to place a lot of caches. But those are something, where can we get those at? I mean, those are fairly cheap these days.
Yeah, you can actually get, believe it or not, there's some really good deals you can get on eBay that are out there for ammo boxes. If you're fortunate enough to have an Army surplus store nearby, A small ammo box will run you about $6, a medium about $12, and a large, big Mondo ammo box will get you about $15.
That's not too bad. Now there are other things that we've used. Obviously, the Lock and Locks containers are pretty good. Those have the seal around them. What are some good things that we can use to maybe even camouflage something like a Lock and Lock container or the Tupperware containers that we've been using?
I guess the best thing that you always want to do when you're putting out a geocache hide is to know the environment you're putting it in. So, example, if you're putting it in an area that there's a lot of public around, you may not want to paint it. You may want to keep it clear. The reason being, similar to the jobs or the bomb scare that they talked about, the police love to be able to see into the container. It's when they can't is when they blow them up. So if you're putting in an area where people can possibly find them, you might want to consider them being clear. If you're going to put it out into another area where people aren't around as much, you can definitely get into all sorts of paints, spray paint in particular. There's textured paints that can make it look like wood or stone or concrete. Also, camo tape's a good way to go as well.
Now, what do you think about peanut butter jars or glass jars, things that you get food in? What are those good items to place caches in?
Glass jars I really am not a fan of. The reason is when you're out poking with a hiking pole and you've got that metal tip on the end, I have broken glass jars in the past doing that. Peanut butter jars are interesting because there is such a phobia about peanut butter in general. Some geocachers don't like opening up a what they know is a peanut butter jar just on the phobia of that it is peanut butter inside, and some people do have allergic reactions. I think if you wash it up, it's, you know, never going to really happen, but it's enough that it does cause an interesting debate.
Well, and not just that, but it is a fairly thin plastic. It's not really meant to hold up. It's meant to hold peanut butter. I would think that especially in any sort of a harsh environment that a peanut butter container is not going to hold up nearly as long. I mean, you may have it for a year in there, but once the winter gets there or the very, very hot summers, depending where you're at, that plastic is not going to be good very long, and it's going to start to warp. You know, I say when you place a cache, you need to think about the long run, not just what's going to stand to what you can throw a baggie in.
Oh, absolutely. You always have to remember all year round what that geocache is going to go through. Plastic can become brittle very easily to break because of the heat, because of the cold. The sun itself can cause it to warp. You always got to remember what that condition is going to be for that geocache where it's placed all year round.
Well, and like it's been really talked about here in the chat room, I know the people who are listening as a podcast cannot see the chat room. Hey, a good reason to come listen to us live on Tuesday nights. But
absolutely.
A lot of people are talking about especially the food containers. Reusing a food container is not a good thing because even if you wash it really good, you're still going to have that food smell. And animals have an amazing sense of smell, and they can hear, or they can smell way better than we can even think, and they'll find that container and tear it apart.
Anybody that has a raccoon or a skunk situation knows that they will pick up containers. Heck, I've seen them pick up whole food, things that store food in them, whole containers, and pick them and drag them down to the lake. So, yeah, if there's any type of hint of food with it, an animal's going to find it, and it will carry that geocache away.
All right. Now, I've seen some pretty creative things that are on your website that are, you don't, that are things you can make with everyday items that you have in your house. What kind of a things, cheap DIY things, that would you say that, I guess, what would you say that would be an awesome container, cheap DIY, something that's clever and creative, not just the run-of-the-mill plastic bags and pill bottles and things like that?
One of the ones that I find that's really kind of useful and is waterproof, if you can get the more solid soup bowls, the ones that where you actually take soup to you to work in your brown bag, you don't want it to leak, those are extremely waterproof. They're small enough that you can have hide them in all sorts of places, and you can cami them any way you want. So I would say soup bowls that you get at the store that have that twist on top work really well.
All right. Anything else that you'd like to say here as far as other things? I noticed that you have said something about a key holder, too, those magnetic key holders that you never locks kind of things. What do you think about those kind of containers?
Again, it always falls down under the environment that you're going to place it. If you're in an area that has a lot of wetness, don't use them. Now, unless you're actually putting them in a hose that's going to keep them dry, don't use key holders in an area that you have get a lot of rain, a lot of moisture. The thing that you always want to consider anytime is where you're going to put that geocache and the environment it's going to be in. If it's fire, you can get away with some of the lesser things like pill bottles, Altoids, that type of thing. I've heard out west it actually works relatively well. In areas in the north where you get winter, or it's south and east where you get a lot of water, not the best way to go.
All right, so I've heard a lot of good ideas here, good and bad, for things that we can find around the house to use as containers. What's the main thing that we should take away from this podcast here? I know that there are a lot of people who, especially now that it's springtime, are placing caches. What's the main thing that we should take from your cheap DIY containers?
I would say always make sure not to go too cheap. In other words, there are glass containers out there that are so flimsy and so light and plastic, you put it out for a week, it's going to be warped and water-filled in a week. We always use the idea that the heavier the plastic and the more waterproof, the better.
And now, I would also add to that, too, that if you think it's a good idea, maybe place it outside your house in the conditions that you're in. See how it stands for maybe a month or two. If it gets wet, then you should not use that container. If it stays firm and it's okay, then you're probably okay. I mean, granted, it's maybe best to do a whole full year of testing, but obviously you can't necessarily do that. So I would say if you can find something and you want to test it out, place it outside, see if it stands up there.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I have a GeoSnippet video out there called What Not to Hide for a Geocache, and it actually shows the dunk test where you can go in and try different types of geocaches and see how they hold up.
We'll go ahead and link to that in our show notes too. Again, our show notes are at geocachingpodcast.com. Thanks, Head Hard Hat, for being on the show here tonight. And again, he had mentioned the GeoSnippets. They're basically small YouTube videos on geocaching, correct?
Yeah, GeoSnippets is actually a full video series now on YouTube, where they're about anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes long. There's about 45 of them out there. And GeoSnippets is also seen on Michigan Magazine Television each week, where I do a 5-minute segment on that as well, and that's seen in all 50 states.
Well, thanks again for being on the show tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks again, guys.
Not a problem. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Make sure to visit cache-advance.com for all of your caching needs. Join us each Tuesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. and our Talkcast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail line 206-350-3GPS anytime to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.